This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Not that long ago, there was a story that got a lot of attention of a young woman who committed suicide following a intensive meditation retreat. And there was a lot of discussion about the dangers of intensive retreats for people with psychological issues and about the whole issue of what contributes to breakthroughs rather than breakdowns. And in the aftermath of that, I got a letter from someone who had had a history of some problems, and he asked me, how should I practice? And I basically replied that he should try to sit a little bit every day and make his bed. Now, what I perhaps didn't make clear is that if he had written to me and hadn't had any history of psychological problems and asked how he should practice, I would have replied, he should try to sit a little bit every day and make his bed. See, the issue has to do with what we take to be the core of practice, what's essential to it, and whether we're guided by a governing idea or metaphor that says intensity is the crucial thing. Intensity is what's going to lead to depth, breakthroughs. And that whether we're guided by metaphors that basically talk about breaking down the ego or the self, whether our practice is dominated by even militaristic kinds of metaphors, the way, you know, Yasutani would talk about, you get up at Sesshin, before dawn and attack while the enemy is still asleep, that kind of thing. And it's really the case that Zen in particular has a long history of that kind of metaphor of practice as combat to destroy or overcome the ego as enemy. And this gets brought into all sorts of discussions in ways where we lose track of the role of metaphor, so that, a generation ago when they started having conferences on Buddhism and psychotherapy, the basic question you kept hearing over and over again was, but doesn't Zen try to break down the ego whereas psychotherapy tries to build it up, right? They're sort of in the grip of a metaphor for each process, and then they create this false dichotomy. So somebody recently contacted me and asked about my participating in yet another round of one of these conferences, and I said I'd be interested in doing it if we could frame it as around what has actually changed in this dialogue in the last few decades, and whether we have gone beyond that kind of false question. Now, one of the things that I think was very important about Joko's contribution was that she gave us a different set of metaphors. In particular, she talked about building a bigger container. See, she shifted the metaphor from one of breaking something to building something. This is enormously important. It means that you go from a whole framework of smashing the ego, breaking things down, breaking through, to a language of building a container, developing capacities, even things like maturing in your practice, ripening in practice. Some people have referred to this as a kind of feminization of American Zen, a kind of transformation of its basic metaphors from one of combat to ones of nurturance and development. And it both does and doesn't change what practice is about. In her, Sesshin's could be as difficult and painful as anybody's. Yet in some way, what we were doing there was trying to develop the capacity to experience and hold and feel a bigger and bigger range of experience, bigger and bigger range of self states. We weren't trying to smash through anything. We were trying to sit still and stay with who and what we were. So in that sense, we look to practice to develop a set of capacities. And so in the old model, you know, if you tell somebody to sit a little bit every day, the implication is, well, that in itself is never going to be intense or powerful enough to have one of these big breakthroughs. But if you think in terms of developing capacities, and particularly in terms of integrating those capacities with your daily life, then what you really want from people is that they gradually build up a willingness to sit, stay with their experience, and do things like make their bed, which brings attention and responsibility and doing things against a certain amount of resistance into their daily life. And that's the other thing that you could say was one of the changes Joko brought about, that in the old days we had a kind of trickle-down attitude towards the effect of practice in everyday life. If you had a big enough experience, somehow spontaneously, that would overflow into your daily life and you would automatically become more, what, open, compassionate. But Joko was very explicit about sort of taking practice into the activities of daily life. And if practice is about staying with difficult experience, well, we don't just experience difficulty on the cushion. We experience difficulty when we face a sink full of dishes or an unmade bed or a partner who is being grouchy. There are all these ways in which we're called upon to stay with and respond to difficulty in very unheroic ways. And that's another big part of this, that we move out of the mode of the hero, maybe more into the mode of the family, right? Initial generations of Zen in the Japanese model is very macho, very heroic. Part of what's happened in our practice here is that kind of softening, moving away from the meditator is hero. See, I think that as we sit a long time, we mature, we ripen. And we can use all sorts of metaphors for that process, whether it's, you know, aging wine or cooking in a slow cooker all day or a ham that needs to be cured, you know, in the barn for a year. You know, in the case of Zen students, I used to say they need to cure for about 100 sesshin days before they begin to soften up. Because Zen practice is tough, very often people get tougher before they get softer in this practice. The first years, you know, I always heard people talking about endurance, right? Toughening yourself to sit with pain. And so there's a virtue in that. You see you can handle, endure, sit with more than you thought you would. It does open you to a bigger range of experience and tolerance. But it can also just make a person simply tougher, harder, proud of being able to endure anything. And I think it takes many, many years of practice to have that make a turn into softness, into lightening up. Into really being able to be compassionate towards your own vulnerability, your own inability to handle anything. And compassionate to the other people around you who are not heroes. Now, the downside of all of this, in some ways, is that it makes what we do to some people look like Zen light, that it's not heroic anymore. It's not a practice that's going to be the toughest, most intense, most authentic. I think all of that might be very interesting stuff to do when you're 20-something. But after you've done this for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, I think we're looking for maturity, not toughness, as the byproduct of all this sitting. And as we do that, we need to sit, to ground what we do in something very simple, very accepting, very hooked into how we're actually living our lives and taking care of ourselves and the world we live in. So sit a little bit every day and make your bed. Mm-hmm.